Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. All right, there's a system to selling, and there's keys to scaling a sales system. But do you have the keys that you need to scale your sales? God, say that five times in a row really fast, and I think you'll at least know how to say something really quickly. That's what we're going to talk about on today's episode, sales systems. And for those of you that are regular listeners, you know this is a very, very popular subject, and it's also one that's near and dear to my heart. I've got a great guest to chat about it with today. Before I get into who that is, today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Wix. Yes, our friends over at Wix.com know a thing or two about turning a scrappy startup team into a global organization that serves millions of people. And they want to share what they've learned with Startup Hustle listeners and their new micro podcast series called Ready for Takeoff by Wix. When you tune in for the Ready for Takeoff, you get to hear from Wix founders and company leaders. They share super short lessons to help you build better programs and teams faster. And hey, that's a topic I can get behind. Subscribe and follow the Ready for Takeoff by Wix podcast wherever you listen to the show. So wherever you listen to this, you can probably find them as well. Now, I mentioned I had a guest today, and with me today, I've got Ryan Dowdy, and Ryan is the founder of Be In The Room. That's an internet publishing and advertising services company. You can connect with her on LinkedIn, and we'll put a link for that in the show notes. And, you know, without further ado, Ryan, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Hey, Matt, I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. Now, if we need to start somewhere, let's do a little bit of your backstory and let people know why we're credible here.
So I started my sales career on accident in Orlando, Florida, selling radio advertising in 2005. So I accidentally fell into a sales career, spent about 15 years selling marketing and advertising solutions. So everything from radio advertising, TV, print, digital, if you can advertise on it, I probably sold it, and got really good, Matt, at building sales teams. So I fell in love with kind of the startup space, the MarTech industry, worked for several startup companies, helping them build and grow sales organizations. And then from there, decided to become an entrepreneur and teach female entrepreneurs how to sell, then started a company teaching sales teams how to sell, and now spend most of my time consulting, you know, one-on-one with all sorts of organizations. It's actually been kind of a wild ride since I've done some reinvention, helping them build sales systems and organizations that can actually scale.
And that's exactly what we were talking about before you came to the studio today. You know, it's really easy to, in my opinion, as a founder, to be able to sell what your business does. And maybe as a CEO, and a lot of people believe the CEO should be the top salesperson in regards to like the pitch and finding and building relationships. But one thing that it is really hard is building a system that is understood, easy to train, and hopefully even easier to implement across a sales team that is beyond you.
Right.
And so much about being a successful entrepreneur or startup founder needs to be about building things that are bigger than yourself.
Right.
So the real question is, I mean, where do you start with that?
So I'm actually not going to tell you to start where you probably think I'm going to start, which is kind of fun. And what I've learned when founders try to go from, you know, chief salesperson to leading a sales team, they go straight into like hows and tactics and numbers, most of which they get wrong anyway. But I always suggest starting, Matt, with like the mission, vision, values of your organization, right? You have to be able to communicate your mission, your vision, your values to a salesperson if they're ever going to be able to leave your office, your building, wherever, and sell things. So it's really starting with identifying those things and not just the stuff that's on your website, right? Like we all know that if you're thinking about scaling a sales org, your business is making money, you probably have a website, all of those things. But for me, it's like, we have to find people that are aligned with that mission, vision, and values before we can ever scale a sales org, right? Sales has been reduced to, it's a numbers game, and it is, right? But if we just focus on numbers and we just focus on metrics and all those different things, we miss an opportunity to make sure that we have the right people in the sales organization to actually be successful.
So when we hear phrases like, it's a numbers game, that actually, in my opinion, flexes both ways. Because sure. At full scale, it's not a numbers game. It's not like, hey, we got to find 28,000 people to reach out to. Because first off, that's way too many.
Right.
And I'm more concerned with like, who are the 28
right.
on that list? Exactly. Where's that 0.1% that's that really high quality lead? So when you hear things like, it's a numbers game, I think it's important to understand it goes both ways.
Sure.
You know, some of that's just like overkill. So is the first part to accurately and clearly define who you're trying to reach as well?
Well, sure. I mean, I guess I made that assumption that we already knew that.
I think at Startup Hustle, we like to start with the understanding level of what like a 5-year-old sure. or maybe a Labrador retriever may have.
Game on.
And then we kind of work our way up from there. But I think it's important to define that. So you get so many people that they say, well, my product appeals and could be used by everybody.
Right.
Not a good thing.
No.
It's not a good thing. It feels like a good thing when you first think about it. You're like, wow, my total addressable market is huge.
Right.
But then okay, so what do I do? Am I advertising at the Super Bowl then?
Right.
How do I define like who I'm looking for, what I need? And we can use Full Scale as an example. Like our best and fastest growing clients are software companies that have between 10 and 50 employees when we meet.
Right.
And those are for those of you that follow sales, those are our Glengarry leads
right.
of sorts, meaning like the ones with the golden bow, the ones that make a lot of sense. But I think that defining who you're trying to reach is a challenge for, I think a lot of startup founders and business owners think they know mm-hmm. and aren't even right.
I think though that comes from Matt, a fear of not being enough, right? Like if I pick somebody, right? If I pick software companies with between 10 and 50 employees, are there going to be enough of those for me to truly scale? Are there going to be enough of those for me to hit my goals? So we're like, you know what? We don't want to get too tight into a niche because we don't want to limit our growth. So I'm not sure if it's they don't know the answer, Matt, or if the fear of if I get too granular with who I want to serve, is that going to stunt growth? So I think that myth is actually a bigger challenge than, because we know, you know, there's not a business. So I started selling radio advertising when I was 21 years old in Orlando, Florida. And the demographics when we sold radio, it was like, we reach adults 25 to 54. That's not a demo. That's a family reunion, right? Like that's not a demographic, yeah, sure. You know, but that's how we've been selling media for years, right? What my, you know, 54-year-old aunt has in common with my 25-year-old sister-in-law, very different things, right? So for me, I think it's a matter of understanding and kind of getting over that idea that niching down is actually going to be a problem and really understanding who gets the best results from our product and service and who finds it easiest to pay for our service. Like, I think sometimes people are afraid to say that. I forget who I was listening to and I wish I could give her credit. I know it was a woman. It'll come to me. But anyway, she was like, we want to sell water to thirsty people in the desert. It does us no good to sell water at Sam's Club. I mean, it does if you're selling a commodity, right? But to your example, you don't need 28,000 leads at full scale, right? You need what you need. So we want to sell water to thirsty people in the desert, meaning who is willing to pay a premium for water because they need water that bad, or the results that your product or service gets them is that amazing, or their opportunity to use your stuff is that great. So for me, I'm always looking for that idea of who is that thirsty person in the desert that is looking for water, and then build from there. And also understanding that just because you choose one target market from a sales perspective doesn't mean that nobody else ever buys your stuff.
Sure, sure. And I mean, we get outside of that boundary occasionally. Mm-hmm. I just, for us, it's those are the accounts that stick the longest and grow the fastest.
Right.
Which make them the best leads.
Of course.
Now, are there enough of them to make a dent? Yeah. And the thing is that might only be that we mentioned a list of 28,000.
Yeah.
That might be the entire list.
Right.
But I only need 56 of those. Mm-hmm. So 0.2%.
Right.
Would more than double the entire volume of a company that currently has 270 employees.
Right.
So pretty impactful.
Sure.
And now certain types of businesses or products are meant to be the complete opposite of that.
Sure.
They need 2.8 million mm-hmm. leads. But those are typically things that shouldn't, you talk about the scalability.
Right.
So how much of that has to be no touch or frictionless? Mm-hmm. Like gigabook.com is a great example. For $15 a month, I cannot talk to you on the phone.
Of course.
To help you with your account.
Right.
And that's actually a rule we have at Gigabook. Like, you have to have more than 5 seats that you pay for us to even consider having a phone call with you.
Right.
You can kind of create a lot of organizational drag mm-hmm. by not understanding that. So at what point do you have to start figuring out, okay, we're crowding our pipeline. Well, a bunch of junk leads
right.
are no good.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's clearly defining the goals. Where are you trying to go? Right? Are you trying to serve 2.8 million people? Or are you trying to serve 56? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, what it does, it varies based on what you sell, what your price point is, again, what you can actually service, right? My guess is, gigabit.com is pretty scalable, right? Like, there is no limit of how you can serve your people. But obviously, in full scale, every client you take on, you have to think about how does that impact the internal organization, right? You have to put a new person in a seat, potentially to serve X number of clients. So I think it goes back to really almost goes back to what I said about mission, vision, and values. And again, not the marketing stuff that goes on your website, but for you as an organization, as a founder, what is your vision for the organization, right? Do you want to, you know, be the premier provider of software development services for, you know, the top 1% of software companies or whatever it is? Or do you want to be the scheduling software that serves startup companies across the world, right? We have to figure out what that vision is and how we want to make an impact before we can even start thinking about sales numbers.
When we go back to the mission part of it, though, so we'll use, once again, we can use Full Scale as an example. Like, our mission is to help companies build software teams quickly and affordably.
Right.
That's it. That's the whole mission. Mm-hmm. There's not nine paragraphs.
Right.
8 bulleted lists. Like, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. And we don't get out of that. People right. ask all the time, can sure. I get virtual assistance? So if you're not aware, out of the 270 employees we have, 264 of them at the time of this recording are in the Philippines.
Right.
So people, can I get a virtual assistant? No, it's not what we do. Mm-hmm. Can I get this? Can I get that? No. What do you do? We predominantly provide full-time service for people that don't have short-term needs and right. want to build a team.
Right.
But it's really easy as an early stage company to, but these people want to pay me money.
Right.
I need the money. I need the sales. Sure. And I will tell you right now, as you begin to scale, you will quickly come to the realization that you either need to fire a bunch of clients right. or you need to stop bringing in the wrong people. Because when you get outside of the mission,
right.
then so is that where the vision comes in?
I think so. So I think the most important thing maybe to define in that, Matt, is the difference between growth and scale, right? The word scale gets thrown a lot around a lot, right? We help businesses scale. We help businesses scale. To me, scale means you have something that works and we're trying to, catapult that thing, right? But growth is the beginning where, yeah, you might take clients who are looking for VAs. You might take clients who are looking for something else because you do need cash flow in the beginning, right? You do need to see who do we best solve a problem for? Who is our thirsty person in the desert for our product or service? To me, that's the growth stage of business where you do a lot. So when I first started, became an entrepreneur, I started teaching, that's a lie. I did not start teaching sales to female entrepreneurs. I started just teaching sales, right? Anybody who would hire me that had a sales problem, I helped them fix it. And I very quickly learned what I liked to do, what was truly scalable for me, what I could do that didn't require more of my time, right? How can I get out of trading time for money? And then I niched into our tagline at the time was we helped high achieving women leave their 9 to 5 and build profitable businesses, right? By learning basic sales skills. That was kind of my whole thing. But my first probably 15 clients did not feed that niche, right? Because I wasn't in the scale phase of business. I was in the grow phase of business. So I helped one company develop sales process. I helped somebody else write an email sequence, right? I helped somebody else, actually figure out what their value proposition was, what the heck they were selling to people, right? So I think what you're talking about is the grow phase of business, right? When we're ready to scale, it's when we know what we have, right? Which in your instance, Full Scale's instance, it's a team of software developers in the Philippines that help businesses, grow team quickly, whatever
which
it was.
Which is not scalable because people aren't scalable.
Amen to that.
Yeah. And a lot of people get that wrong. They mm-hmm. think it is. They're like, oh, I want to scale my business by adding more people. That's not the right definition of scale.
I would agree.
That could be growth.
Yep.
But not scale.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where people get stuck with this whole idea of scale versus grow and sales process and all the other stuff. And I think that's probably why a lot of people struggle to hire salespeople is because it's really hard to train a salesperson to sell 42 different iterations of a product, true, right? If you had a product suite this big, you know, it would be really hard to hire a salesperson, right? You have a product suite this big, for those of you that can't see my hands, right? It's a handful of products that Full Scale serves their clients, or maybe there's a handful of ways. And so I think that that's what's really important is people, the first thing they want to do is hire a salesperson, but it's really hard to teach that salesperson how to sell the deals that you're scratching on the back of a cocktail napkin because you're the visionary, right? Like you have that in your head. They're never going to have that. So I think it's the difference between growth and scale, to be honest with you.
I think a lot of it is also, I've been using I don't know if this is a real term, but it is now. I've been discussing organizational honesty. Mm. And for me, I had we've had a very mixed bag of trying to grow a sales team.
Yeah.
And along the way, I had to be honest with myself about my expectation of what salespeople were going to do because they came back to me and I'm like, well, why aren't we having conversations with these 100 people? And they said to me, they're like, well, Matt, it's easier for you to get them on the phone than it is for me.
Sure.
And I'm like, well, tell me more. They're like, because I'm trying to reach you.
Right.
And do you respond to emails like the ones that I'm sending? Is it, and I honestly spend a lot of time avoiding that.
Right.
Just because it's overwhelming.
Sure.
So I think that honest approach to like what you, with the growth of your sales organization is like, you may have to temper your expectation about how easy it is because it's once again, easy. Mm-hmm. To be the founder, the CEO, the person with the vision, the excitement, and your message is heard a little differently.
Sure. It's the perceived importance.
Yeah.
You have CEO in your title. It's so funny. I just had a conversation the other day with a woman who was introduced to me. They're trying to hire salespeople. They've cycled through 3 or 4 of them. We get on the phone. I'm like, tell me what's happening. And she's like, we've had a sales guy for 8 weeks and he's only closed 5 deals. And I'm like, cool. How much were the deals? And she was like, $5,000. I'm like, so he's closed $25,000 in 8 weeks.
It's not that bad.
It's incredible for a stranger off the street who did not know your company 8 weeks ago to be able to show up. And again, these people they've got leads coming to them, right? But that idea that, okay, well, Matt closes, 80% of the sales calls he gets on, like your sales team's never going to do that.
Which I don't, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just saying, like, that's back to that realistic understanding. Right. And once again, to give you an example, if any of our salespeople brought in 5 new accounts
right
in 2 months, that would actually be a big win for us.
Right.
So think about the difference between that and now our average client spends about 20 grand a month.
Right.
That'd be a huge, that would be a big win.
Right. I was gonna say, if you were, if you hired a new salesperson, they brought in one deal in 8 weeks, that would be huge, right? Because we're talking $240,000 in revenue, right?
Yep.
So I think it's just, it's understanding the expectations, and it's this idea that if you think of how you got started, like when you start, I don't know the whole startup story of Full Scale, but I know when I started my business, I had an idea to start a business in 2018. I kicked it around a little bit. I made a few dollars here and a few dollars there and a few dollars there. It took me a really long time to be making, not a really long time, took me about a year to be making consistent money in my business that was predictable and that I could count on. And that's me. I am the founder, right? It is my mission, my vision, my baby. I was service delivery at that point in the game, right? I was out there selling myself. And we expect a salesperson to come in and figure out how to do it in 90 days. And if they haven't paid for themselves in 90 days, we're kicking them out. And again, I think it depends on what you're selling, right? Again, to use the example of, you know, a lower scale service or something along those lines, we're having a different conversation. But when you're selling, you know, I would consider, is $250,000 a year, is that considered an enterprise sale? If you're selling an enterprise product to CEOs, that's a totally different sales process than selling software to, you know, middle managers.
Or to selling fans to people that are in our studio right now, which, by the way, for those of you listening, it's like 10,000 degrees in our studio right now. So if you hear like water dripping, that's me sweating. But you could really sell me a fan really easily in here right now. Right. But that's a different transaction, and you're right. Mm-hmm. But that should be like a frictionless transaction.
Right, of course.
So some of that is also like we talk about, I don't want to get so deep down the rabbit hole of like salespeople, because some of scaling the sales process is, well, you look at my co-host and someone who has a weekly show, Andrew Morgans,
right.
His whole business at marknology.com is helping people understand the landscape associated with selling shit on Amazon.
Right.
And that's like a completely different approach, but it requires a lot of thought, understanding, and once again, scalability. So
sure.
you look at Amazon, and this is a great example. They take 30 or 25% of my sale. What are they giving you for that?
Right.
Because what would a salesperson cost you to go out and sell that manually? You're hoping.
You pray.
You're hoping that your salesperson sells something. Then you have to deal with fulfillment. You have to deal with a lot of other stuff. So in some cases, less is more.
I would agree.
In some cases, it's not. So, I mean, there's a lot to be figured out. I think the people component of a sales process for me is the hardest.
Sure.
The most frustrating.
That's the hardest part of
and
business.
And the highest failure rate.
But so you run a team, you know, out of the Philippines, that's what, 264 people. I would argue that people in general are the hardest part of running a business.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's the people. So why do software startups and companies trade at such a high multiple? It's because software shows up to work every day. It doesn't complain. It doesn't quit. It doesn't get a different job. It doesn't, you know, it's there 24/7. And that's, so when we think about this, back to that buzzword of scalability,
sure.
The true definition of that is something is a system, process, or platform that you can dial up for immediate demand.
Right.
Now, and then you have companies. So Full Scale is actually a mix between the two, because
right.
We have a whole platform that manages clients, applicants, and our actual management. And that's what makes us scalable. That's why we've grown so quickly. Because without that, I am like 10 million spreadsheets.
Right.
And not a whole lot past that. So to give you a comparison, over the last 3 months, 2,500 people have applied to work at Full Scale.
That's incredible.
I know, but overwhelming.
Right.
But our system chews that up and spits it out because it's able to automate so much of that. That's an example of scalability.
Sure.
We went from 150 applicants a month to 900 a month, which, by the way, there was a month in there where it was a total shit show because I broke it on purpose.
Right.
I literally broke. So that's part of our sales. That's still a sales process. Recruitment and hiring is mm-hmm. a sales activity.
Of course.
Because you're selling people on why they want to quit a job and come
right.
work for you.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that we had to learn how to keep people engaged and do a lot of other stuff to automate it. But that's a better example of scalability. Now, growth on the other side, like just I like to give practical examples. We get more sales from our existing clients
mm-hmm.
than we do from new incoming,
right.
like first orders.
Right.
And that's growth. You can grow the company.
Right.
You don't necessarily, I could run the So we only service like 42 clients.
Yeah.
And with that, do $10 million a year in revenue.
That's wild.
It is. But I could manage that with spreadsheets. I don't need a platform to do that.
Sure.
But the future growth. So what happens when, all right, so many startup founders and business people, they have this plan and their whole mentality and all of it is structured around what happens when the sky is falling. And they do not give any consideration to what happens if all of this goes right.
Yeah.
So that's been the challenge for us. And you have to prepare for the, folks, you have to prepare for this stuff months in advance.
Sure.
You can't decide to be ready to be the 1,000 person company as you're hiring your 1,000th person.
Right.
Because you won't get there.
No.
It's going to fall apart quickly.
Yep.
So when we start planning our sales process, how do we look around the corner?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the hardest part as a founder, a business person, and sometimes a salesperson is understanding what people are going to buy later. As
sure.
Well. Trends change. There's a huge article, and I like to sound fancy and let people know I read the Wall Street Journal.
Ooh, fancy.
It makes up for the fact that I dropped out of 5 colleges. So,
and you run your $10 million company. It's fine, right?
So there, I mean, I won an award from Forbes, but I couldn't graduate from college. So. It's true. I said that on like the very first page of the Million Dollar Bedroom book.
I love it.
So, you know, dropped out of 5 colleges, but I might be a junior now. There's a rumor that I'm going to get an honorary degree from a university in Cebu.
That's exciting.
Not going to confirm or deny that, but yeah. I told him I only want a post-grad. I'm like, if I don't get letters after my name, I don't want it. Well, it's fair to say. But by the way, speaking of selling, I should remind everyone that our friends over at Wix, yes, the website and building platform, know a thing or two about turning the scrappy startup team into a global organization serving millions of people. Remember when Wix came out, by the way?
I do.
Yeah. And that was,
I played in marketing. So yeah.
They're huge now. So, but they want to share what they've learned with you in a new micro podcast series called Ready for Takeoff by Wix. I think if you like this show, you're going to like what they're talking about too. You know, the average podcast listener listens to like 7 different shows.
Wild.
Some people are probably like, why are you advertising the Wix podcast? Because we know you listen to other stuff too. So this is where the company's founders and leaders are going to share super short lessons. Super short's not easy to say. Designed to help you build better products and teams faster. You can subscribe and follow the Ready for Takeoff by Wix right now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere else you listen to a podcast. So yeah, by the way, our producer loves it when I make my own personal commentary in the middle of the of the ad reads.
But sure. Hey,
we're still talking about you, Wix. So remember that.
So you said something about growth that I want to hit on. Like you said that a lot of your growth comes from inside of your organization. And I think that is something that a lot of business owners and founders in general, they overlook that step when you say sales.
Yeah.
They think, okay, I need to go out, I need to go get new leads and new people and new customers. And
I'm going to give you- easier to sell to the people already in the boat.
I just said this opportunity. I'm doing some consulting for a women's organization, right? Their professional organization for women. And I'm doing some consulting for them. And that is one of the things that we talked about was like, what is your member services team doing to, you know, to make sure your people stay, to retain, to upsell? You have 3 different membership levels, right? Like what kind of revenue does your member services team drive? And she kind of just looked at me and cocked her head a little bit. Like that was the craziest question she'd ever been asked. And I'm like, you're joking. Like you used to be a 20,000 person membership. You have literally 900,000 leads in your database and you're out here trying to figure out how to cold message on LinkedIn. Like you're missing the point, my friend. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't bring in new people. Cause like you said, trends change, people grow up, needs change, et cetera. But the idea that sometimes growth happens within our organization, what's the next thing that our clients need to use the first thing that we sold them, right? Once they're using that and using it well, is there something else that we can give them? Is there somebody else we can partner with that can give them that thing? Cause so often, and I'm a salesperson and a consultant. And so I really like it when you're like, my sales process is broken because I can fix that. But sometimes the answer is what's already in house? What leads do you already have? What opportunities do you already have? And how is your internal organization set up to make sure you're retaining clients, renewing clients, and selling those people more stuff?
I think a thing to understand with that is, can you also service the people that are in the boat? That's the issue we have at Full Scale that's so challenging on. So knowing that people aren't scalable and that people possess different types of skills. Some skills are more in demand than others. And we have a bunch of clients that have an insatiable appetite for certain kinds of skills, which means I'm not really doing a new client or account a favor if I'm bringing them in for something where I can't fill their seats.
Sure.
I think that a lot of product companies ran into similar issues during the pandemic because there were supply chain problems. And, you know, because if you can't service the people that you're already doing business with, or you can't manage those accounts or provide value or support any of it, you have no business trying to double your the list of people on your account. Is that fair to say?
100%.
How do you fix that problem?
That is not my specialty, Matt. You know, it's not, but you know, for us, the first thing that we do, you know, I just made a hard pivot in my business. And you know, I'm now running a women's organization, which is incredible and fun, but literally from go, our onboarding process includes how do we upsell and retain and get referrals from these people? Like that was one of the first processes we built, right? Okay. We have a new customer. How do we onboard them? And then it's like, okay, how do we let them know what our next step is? How do they let them know how to give us referrals? How do we make sure we retain them? What things do we have in place to make sure that we are not on a hamster wheel of bringing people in and dumping them out the back?
Yeah.
And it was literally, and I'm a salesperson for crying out loud. And that was the first process.
You just said you don't know how to fix it, but you just described how to fix it.
Valid.
And that's the thing. And I believe in responsible selling.
Right.
You know, like you are not going to last as a company, as a salesperson or anything, if you get in the business of non-delivery.
So let's talk about that from a sales leadership perspective, because as somebody who is not too terribly far removed from actually being a salesperson inside of an organization and not an entrepreneur or a founder, so many founders and CEOs have such unrealistic expectations, like you said, of what their sales team can do, should do, will do, et cetera, that these salespeople aren't selling responsibly. They aren't selling honestly because they're worried about keeping their damn jobs. So what's our responsibility as founders and owners?
Or they're just trying to make a commission.
That too. But I think a lot, I mean, you know, that could be part of it, but I think sometimes it is this idea of like, I have to put numbers on the board or I'm going to get walked. And sometimes that leads to bullshitting about what your capabilities actually are. Sometimes that leads to, you know, saying, yes, we can meet that demand when we know that we can't because of that. So I think some of that sits on our shoulders as founders. And then as the folks that we hire to run our sales organizations, whether it's a VP of sales or a, you know, chief revenue officer or whatever, we really need to make sure that that person feels empowered to say no. And I think Matt, the first time we met, one of the things that you said to me was that we say no to more people than we say yes to.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like a lot.
Right. Yeah. And some of them just aren't, aren't a fit because they're just financially, they're not just ready. The people who can't afford you, but
Yeah. Yeah. We're not, because we're not set up as an organization. Well, we can service only a finite amount of clients that want to build things from scratch.
Right.
Which I refer to as the day one startup.
Sure.
And that is that's a different phase in the software development lifecycle.
Sure.
That requires you don't have any understanding. And the thing is we specialize in hiring and employing experts.
Right.
And those experts want to work on expert shit.
Right.
They don't want to go back to day one. They want to join teams that have processes and have other smart people involved. I'm not saying that a day one startup doesn't have smart people involved, but they don't have experienced people involved in those cases. So that leads to a lot of frustration. And you get back to that people component. Mm-hmm. My business is 100% people driven.
Sure.
So if I get people in the wrong roles and on the wrong teams, and that's where our sales process becomes really complex is we have to understand the skills and passion that a service provider has before assigning a service provider to a client.
Right.
Because if you get people in the wrong roles and they're doing the wrong stuff, they're going to quit or they just won't do a good job.
Right.
So the idea is, it's like, okay, so I used this example yesterday as we've recently hired a new sales director. And I was like, you can't just assume that he would be great at opening a sales territory in France.
Right.
Because he doesn't speak French.
Right.
Right. So, you know, just because you know sales doesn't mean you can do certain types of things. And,
sure.
And that's been one of the biggest challenges that we have as we've tried to multiply our efforts, is understanding like and defining where people are going to get it.
Yeah.
Get it, want it, and capable.
Right.
Are the things. And if you don't have all three out of three, you don't have the right person in the right role.
But then that goes back to like true scalability of a sales organization is having systems and processes and things in place so that you can figure out, is it a people problem? Is it a, you know, because so I grew up selling advertising and marketing, right? And so selling advertising and marketing, sorry to any advertising and marketing listeners, are garbage at training and teaching salespeople, right? We bring people into organizations. You get trained this way. You get trained this way. You get trained this way. And then all of a sudden salespeople suck. Nobody wants to work. Right. We talk about how shitty all the salespeople are, but really it's because you don't have a testing ground. You don't have a foundation to figure out why is Matt so successful and Sarah's not, right? Or what is missing in Joe's training that's keeping him from being successful. And so that is where I do think it is important to have systems and processes and training set up as a founder for those people, because it's going to be impossible to tell, is this person performing and why or why not, right? The number of people when I was leading a sales training organization that would come to me and they'd say, so-and-so is not performing. I'm like, cool, give me the data, give me the numbers, give me the information, tell me what's happening. And they're like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, well, there's your problem, my friend.
Because you haven't laid it out. Exactly. You know, you have to tell a salesperson, you have to do X amount of this, Y amount of this, Z amount of this, and you have to track it,
yep,
follow it, or keep up with it here.
Yep.
And one of the earliest, and I can hear his voice in my head right now, activity breeds sales. And you'll find that salespeople that aren't active are the worst.
Right.
I want to back up to something. Most salespeople are terrible, just in general.
Tell me more about that.
I just think that if you talk to anybody that's in sales, first off, if you say, are you a good salesperson? They all say yes.
Of course.
And if they say no, then they shouldn't be in a sales role.
Okay.
But you got to keep in mind with your, back to that level of expectation, not everybody can be in the top 5%.
No.
Because it just does, that's not the way it goes. And most salespeople are not, they think they're stuck. They think that it's their job to explain features, not the advantages and benefit of what said features do.
But at what point is it the company's job to teach them how to do that?
Day one.
Right.
What's the benefit? So, what are the advantages? So FAB, features, advantages, benefits.
Sure.
I try to train everyone that if you're talking about something that's a feature, if you're not following or including within that statement the advantage that you have over the competitive whatever.
Sure.
And then the benefits. So people buy the benefits. They don't buy the features. They right. buy the, they, it, you know, the benefit is, okay, so one that's so remarkably untrackable and intangible is peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe sells at the highest premium of anything you'll find out there.
Sure.
If you can figure out how to explain why your feature has an advantage over the other product and why that creates peace of mind,
mm-hmm.
you'll make a lot of sales.
The problem is if you use the word peace of mind in a sales conversation, people will tune out because nobody thinks that's what they actually want. I think that's the challenge. Not that salespeople suck, that we're selling the wrong thing, right?
Let me demonstrate. Let's say you are, okay, so we'll go back to Gigabook and you say, okay, you run a rafting you give canoe tours.
Fun.
All right. So, but sounds you can exciting. Only do one a day. And the problem that you have is while you're out giving a canoe tour, you aren't there to answer the phone for sure. the other people that want to book. So the advantage that we have is a fully customizable platform that will let you control the group size that you have, including limiting it. Mm-hmm. But the real benefit of what Gigabook is going to do for your canoe tour service is it's going to take appointments while you're out on the road. And that should generate peace of mind. So now you can actually pay attention to where you're driving and not be thinking, man, am I missing that next booking? Or do I have to hire someone at a $3,000 a month cost to do what Gigabook could do for $15 a month?
Sure.
That is FAB right there.
Okay.
And, you know, so.
Can I take it one step further?
Yeah, please.
So all of that, yes. Right. One step further, people buy based on emotion and they justify with logic. So I want to know why the canoe tour operator, what their goals are, what they want, what it means for them when their tours are fully booked out for the next 30, 60, 90 days. Because that's, I think, what most people are missing. That's what you're selling. right? The vision that that business owner had, like imagine having a team of canoe tours, right? Imagine being able to open another location. Imagine being able to retire my spouse because my canoe tour business is so wildly successful that my spouse doesn't have to go to that job that they hate anymore. So it's the feature, what'd you say, feature?
FAB. Feature Advantage Benefit.
Right. But then it's also like, what's in it for them?
Yeah.
Because sometimes we stop at FAB and we're like, cool, peace of mind's amazing. Peace of mind is optional, right? And for $15 a month, it's not.
With Gigabook, we found that people felt like they were chained to their business.
Sure.
They would get out, they would get, the canoe comes off the river and now, oh my God, I've got all these emails. I have these text messages to reply to. I really want to launch boats 2 and 3, but I can't because I'm just even struggling with number one.
Right.
I mean, by the way, that's a definition of scalable.
Sure.
So $15 more a month per boat, you can now add more bookings in there and it'll take care of, you know, like a lot of different stuff. So,
and $15 a month is also a very different solution than, you know, a $20,000 a month solution. So we're having a little bit different conversation there, but do you know what I'm saying? Like, cause to me, it's like, oh, I've got all these emails and I got all these phone calls. To me, it's the step of, and my wife is pissed off all the time because all I do is play on my effing phone, trying to fill the next door and the next door and the next door. Right. Because that's what you're selling as much as you're selling a piece of technology. That's why I think that, I don't think that salespeople suck. I think that, sorry, friends, most founders suck at teaching their salespeople how to sell that.
Yeah, I still think salespeople suck, but I've become kind of elitist in that regard, maybe. I have a little bit because I just, like, I have bought so much shit that I don't need because I'm just shocked when a salesperson actually asks me to buy something. Like I literally, you know, ask people to buy stuff and you will sell more stuff. And I want to, we can talk more about that after that. I let you know that one, I have a sound effect button somewhere. Hang on, let's see it.
Don't push any buttons.
I don't know if I'll turn it off. I'll come back and record this and realize that the entire last 5 minutes has been, but I kind of want to see what happens. Once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle was sponsored by Wix. And are you an entrepreneur or founder trying to figure out how to successfully navigate the rocket ship that is known as hypergrowth? Do you want to take control over your company's online presence internally and externally? Well, our friends over at Wix Enterprise can help. Wix Enterprise is a platform that provides business with an all-in-one solution for all types of growth and business needs. Create high-performing websites for your business, all of which are backed by enterprise-grade security as well as expert support to help you manage and scale online. Head over to Wix.com for more info. And while you're there, I want to give you a reminder that you should tune in on Monday when Matt Watson and his guest, Bob Rosin, will be sharing the lowdown on exactly how startups can partner with major companies. Who knows? Maybe even Wix. So here we are 40 minutes later. And God, the sales conversations fly by. I do want to remind everyone. So I've lost 3 pounds during this episode. It is so freaking hot in the studio today. I can't get past that. All right. So we talked about a lot of stuff. And if we really wanted to get into sales systems and the key to scaling, that would require a series.
Sure.
So you know, we were just getting into a few things, but you know, here we are wrapping stuff up. So if we have to go back to what we talked about today, what are the most basic elements?
Ask people to buy shit.
I mean, by the way, if you do that, you will.
I like how we buried that at minute 38.
It should have, maybe I should have led with that because I was talking about this yesterday. I think any organization what immediately increases their sales if you get in the habit of
the data actually supports
something.
That too. It's like it's over half don't ask for the sale.
But that's why I think salespeople suck because they start talking to someone and then they're afraid to ask them to buy something.
Are they afraid to ask them to buy something?
Yes.
Because they weren't taught how to do it correctly and what to say and what to do and how to handle that objection and what objections they might possibly get in that sales process.
They build rapport with a client or a prospect and then they feel that they're going to offend them if they try to sell them something.
Sure.
And I'm offended if you don't try to sell me something.
Sure. So you're sometimes offended. People
just
trying to sell
you
things.
You just have to ask and people, well, how do I do that? Did you want to go ahead and get this?
Yeah.
When can we get started?
Right.
Do you want me to send you a contract?
Right.
That's it.
Pay in full or payment
literally
plan.
Literally sold tens of millions of dollars worth of stuff in my life with those 3 lines. It's that simple. And sometimes you got to ask more than once.
You almost always do. The data says you have to ask 3 times.
Yeah. Depends on what you're selling.
Valid.
But you don't ask, probably not going to sell. Kind of just is like maybe some very high level advice in life for getting what you want is ask. Tell my wife that all the time.
Yeah.
She's like, we didn't do this or that. Did you consider asking? Because if I knew that that was a need or a desire or something that would make you happy, I will help fulfill that possibility. Kind of like the possibility of getting a fan in the studio right now. So sorry, I can't get past it. I'm like, it's 100 degrees in Kansas City today. And I'm getting the stark reminder that our new podcast studio has an inactive air conditioning duct. Ryan's across the table from me chugging Ozarka 100% natural spring water. And the benefit of that, folks, is not dying of a heat stroke while recording
water to thirsty people in the desert, my friend.
And it's
a fan to Matt in this.
And we are here. You didn't know when you mentioned that so early that you were selling to yourself. And I really should have just taken this bottle of water over for it. You get the like wolf, sell me this pen. Here, and I'll sell you this water right now for $5.
Exactly.
If you won't give me that, I'll pay myself 10. All right. So ask people to buy shit.
Sure.
Was that the thesis statement?
That is the thesis, but I think it does. But I think like the basics are to round it out is really understand growth versus scale. Right. To really understand, like you said in the very beginning, who is best suited to buy our stuff, right? Who is the, you know, the thirsty person in the desert, right? And then really understanding that there has to be some sort of system, process, activity, to use your word, right? Activity for your sales team to follow if you really truly want to see is it working or not.
Yeah. You gotta write it down.
Right.
No one writes it down.
Ever.
It's shocking.
It's wild the number of people who don't know that part in their business. And again, understanding that your numbers, your metrics, even if you start tracking your metrics as the founder, your salesperson's metrics are not going to look like yours, possibly for years. And you have got to let go of that.
Well, I wrote a script. I answered this 4 years later at Full Scale. I answered the same questions. I handled the same objections.
Sure.
For those of you listening, a prospect that has no objections with what you sell is probably not a prospect. They're probably not interested in buying.
Not even a little bit.
People that are interested in buying have objections. They are not problem. This isn't a problem. That's a sign that they're interested, because if they're not, most people don't even bother to object. They don't ask about it. They don't.
And if you don't ask them to buy anything, they also won't object, for the record.
So as we round this out, you help people sell stuff, right?
I do help people sell stuff. So I've been in a little season of reinvention. So that's why Matt has asked you to connect with me on social media. So I ran a couple of sales organizations. And now really I'm just spending my time consulting. So, you know, in true startup fashion, is there a website for that? Currently the answer is no. But if you connect with me on LinkedIn and you want to talk sales system, sales processes, hiring, all of those different things that we hammered out today, I love to help people do those things.
Yeah, and I've had experience just chatting with you about all different things in sales. And you know, Ryan, you get it.
I do.
You want it and you're capable of doing it. So you meet the criteria of now. I 10 years ago, I would have given different advice because I used to try to do everything myself.
Sure.
And I've really, you know, as I talked to you about different stuff along the way of, oh, as I've gotten older and wiser and calmer and happier to get to a successful destination, I've been reached out to hire more subject matter experts. A lot of, you know, I could walk into, similar to yourself, I can walk into so many sales processes with a fresh set of eyes and be like, oh my, this is really bad. And this is, you know, and it's a different problem selling things in different places to different people in different industries. There's not a uniform answer other than ask people to buy shit.
Amen.
That is universal.
Can that be the name of this podcast?
It probably should. And I maybe should start a podcast just called that. I think it would go over well.
I don't know what my podcast title is, but if it could be ask people to buy shit, I would be really happy.
Yeah, except for Apple might not like that. Jerks. I think we would run into future marketing and censorship problems, because I got to say, even when we put out the Startup Hustle YouTube channel, we learned how, like, that one word So one of our guests on that was Heather and Kyle from Casey Hempco. Don't put the tag hemp in anything, because then they think you're trying to sell weed.
Sure.
You're not. Is that easier than selling stuff, water to people in the desert?
Yes.
You, okay, there we go. And that's where we're going to end today's episode. I'll see you down the road.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.